From NPR News, this is News and Notes. I'm Farai Chidea. With a new majority in Congress, Democrats have big plans for Iraq and the environment. But their biggest plans may be for your wallet. Massachusetts Democrat Barney Frank is expected to chair the House Financial Services Committee. He recently told NPR's Jim Zaroli that Democrats are worried about a growing inequality in American wages.
How do you promote economic growth or have policies that are supportive of economic growth, but deal with this increasing inequality? Because I think you're going to find, you're already finding, that the average worker's sense of disengagement from the overall economy already has some negative consequences.
So will the Democrats reshape America's economy? We've got two economists in our Washington, D.C. headquarters to weigh in. First, William Spriggs, professor and chair of economics at Howard University, and William Niskanen, chairman of the Cato Institute and a former acting chairman of President Reagan's Council of Economic Advisors. Welcome to you both.
Thank you.
So let's start with Congressman Frank's wage gap. Mr. Niskanen, is he correct about that?
Yes, there has been a growing wage gap that dates for the past 30 years. I think it's primarily a consequence of two conditions. One is a very poor performance of our public school system, and second is the technology change that has increased the relative demand for skilled people. The combination of more people coming out of school or not even finishing school, coming out of school with low skills, and an increasing demand for people with high skills, I think is the primary reason for the increased variance of wages.
Professor Spriggs, you are at Howard University, obviously training some of the promising young African Americans who will go on to take their places in the professional realm. But who's really being hit by the income disparities?
Those at the bottom who would be helped by proposals to increase the minimum wage are faced with deterioration in the conditions of the low-wage labor market. We don't do a good job in making that a competitive labor market. It is a very segmented labor market, and that creates a monopsony power for those employers. So,
I have to just ask, what is a monopsony power?
A monopsony is the opposite of monopoly. So it's when you have a single buyer of a thing as opposed to the single producer of a thing, and you get the similar sort of bad economic outcome. You get lower prices, or in this case, lower wages and less of a demand for labor than you would if you had an open competitive labor market. Most people see this when they go to a fast food restaurant here in the Washington, D.C. area. It's not unusual that the employees will either all be Hispanic or all black or all white. And this is a very low-skilled job. So you would imagine if there's going to be diversity anywhere, it ought to be in these low-skilled jobs where anyone could do the job. But you see the least amount of diversity. So these workers, if they start at a very low level, can't work their way up to a decent wage. And we end up subsidizing them through the earned income tax credit if they have children. If they are single, which most of them are because they can't get married at those kind of wages, they're trapped.
Mr. Niskanen, I once was at an economic conference with an American multimillionaire who created a well-known business, and he said, we should abolish the minimum wage because that will allow me to hire more people and create more jobs. Do you support raising the minimum wage, or are you in favor of leaving it where it is, if not decreasing it?
I would be in favor of abolishing the minimum wage. It's based upon the politics of nostalgia. The primary people who benefit from it are secondary workers and non-poor families. The minimum wage would particularly hurt the least skilled people in our labor force, because the primary way that low-skilled people acquire skills is by their first job. And this, an increase in minimum wage, the Democrats are proposing a 40% increase over a three-year period, would reduce the number of low-skilled people who have an opportunity for jobs.
Well, I think it's a little more complicated than that. Wages are set by a number of factors, and the minimum wage just serves as a norm. And so when you tell an employer what the minimum wage is, they may set it a little bit above that, but they're setting it based on the minimum wage.
So in a way, it's a sort of incentive or a benchmark.
It's a benchmark, and you don't see employers move away from it. So what happens is that you, in fact, encourage a low-wage path because employers, rather than keep up with productivity gains, have decided that they can just keep doing jobs at a low-skill fashion. And so you encourage them to not have the kind of productivity increases that we ought to be observing we had a minimum wage in this nation that kept up with average wages, and nothing really bad happened. In the 80s, we backed away from having a minimum wage, and the result has been massive growth of low-wage jobs. So it isn't that you really get more jobs. You just get more low-wage jobs if you keep the minimum wage down.
I have to go back to you, Mr. Niskanen. In the 80s, that was your era, President Reagan's era. You were on the Council of Economic Advisors. Did you guys take us off course in terms of what American workers needed?
Well, American workers need better skills, most importantly, and they need the experience of a job. And the experience of a job is the way that low-skilled people typically acquire additional skills, and that's the key issue. I think Professor Spriggs is wrong in suggesting somehow that wages are not based upon demand and supply at the low end of the labor force. Walmart did not become the world's largest private employer by exploiting their labor force. They pay more than minimum wage, a good bit more than minimum wage, and they typically have many times as many people applying for those jobs as the number of jobs that are open. So there's little evidence of exploitation at the low end of the labor force.
Okay, moving on to taxes. After the midterms, I spoke with Congressman Charlie Rangel, who's likely to head the House Ways and Means Committee. He wouldn't say what he had in store for President Bush's tax cuts, but if you're the president, I wouldn't get my hopes up.
We ought to really take a look and see whether or not the tax cuts that have already been enacted provide enough relief for the middle class and the working poor, and I am more concerned with removing the alternative minimum tax that I am with what happens in 2010.
Professor Spriggs, what does that say to you? And do you think the Democrats are going to try to end the tax cuts that the president has made?
Well, everyone in D.C. has known that we're going to have to do something about the alternative minimum tax, and it keeps being pushed off and it doesn't show up in budget forecast. So the problem is if you do something to solve the alternative minimum tax, which is a tax designed to make sure people pay a tax and can't escape it through fancy deductions and fancy lawyers, but ends up including a whole set of middle-class families because we didn't adjust the range of incomes that are subject to the alternative minimum. So if you fix the alternative minimum, then you really need to pay for it. And if you're going to pay for it, then that really means it needs to come out of these other tax cuts. And so in 2010, when all of these things sunset, they're going to have to sunset in order to fix the alternative minimum. It really is going to be that we have to make choices. And I think that Congressman Rangel is right. If we're going to make a choice, it ought to be in favor of middle class and working families because they are the ones who have been hurt the most by the last 4 years.
Mr. Niskanen, you know, when you take a look at President Bush's 6 years so far, he really has taken great pride in his tax cuts. And yet, Democrats and even some Republicans have argued, look, this is giving money back to the wrong people. How do you feel on that issue?
Well, I favor the tax cuts, but they should have been paired with the spending cuts. And that's the key problem of the Bush fiscal policy, is that he has cut taxes on three or four occasions, and he's had an unusually high rate of growth of federal spending. So I would favor getting rid of the alternative minimum tax. I pay a significantly higher tax rate, by the way, under the alternative minimum than I would under the regular income tax, because the deductions that I have do not count against the alternative minimum. And so the primary people who would gain by eliminating the alternative minimum tax are middle and high income people and not low income people. There would be a loss of federal revenues. I think something like 20% of taxpayers now pay the alternative minimum, and that will go up over time. So there would be a loss of revenues, and I would favor pairing that with a significant reduction of a variety of federal spending.
What would you cut in terms of spending?
Well, I would cut what is roughly $100 billion of corporate welfare, particular subsidies that affect specific industries and firms. I would cut what is a huge, over-bloated federal subsidies to agriculture, which is now over $20 billion a year. I think we will see within the next several years a significantly lower spending for military forces in Iraq and maybe even in Afghanistan. And I think those are the kinds of measures that ought to be considered in association with getting rid of the alternative minimum.
When you mention words like corporate welfare and agricultural subsidies, you don't sound very much like a Republican.
Well, I think the Republicans in the last few years have forgotten their commitment to fiscal responsibility. But I think a period in the political wilderness will remind them of their earlier commitment to that end.
And finally, Professor Spriggs, I'm going to end on you. Taking all of what we've talked about and bringing it back to the stereotypical American family, of course, American families have changed, but mom, dad, a couple of kids, what do they need to know about the economic policy making that goes on this larger level?
It affects them greatly. The federal government can't cause growth, but it can cause the shape of growth. It can cause growth to either favor everyone or to exacerbate inequality. And over the last 4 years, we've seen the income of those at the median, the people who are in the middle, fall while the economy has been expanding. That's a path that isn't in favor of middle class and working families. And I think the new policies, the sensitivity to those in the middle and to those at the lower end that you're hearing from this new Congress, are going to be good for Americans. They will finally have a Congress that's paying attention to what's happening to their pocketbooks.
Well, Professor Spriggs, Mr. Niskanen, thank you so much.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you.
William Spriggs is a professor and chair of economics at Howard University, and William Niskanen is chairman of the Cato Institute and a former acting chairman of President Reagan's Council of Economic Advisors.